Hello, Internet, from the Expo Hall at Citrix Synergy 2016. The opening keynote, the first keynote of Kirill Tatarinov, has just finished up. This is Brian Metten. I'm standing in the TechTarget booth. Joining me is Jack Metten. Hello, Jack.
Hello.
And Gabe Knuth.
Hello.
I feel like we're all playing a little bit of the role of Justin today, trying to get our podcast rig working. So, Justin, we miss you, buddy.
Yeah, Justin, our multimedia producer, who used to run the podcast for us, has left TechTarget probably 6 months ago and joined Tesla. And he actually posted a video of him in a self-driving Tesla on the highway.
We're running podcasts at Citrix Synergy.
We like IT, but you know.
And interestingly, so this morning's keynote, there were no Teslas on stage. There was, less flashiness, more back to basics. Obviously, I think we all know we've all been talking for the last year about all the things that we were thinking about coming into this keynote. How do you guys feel?
I think it was exactly what we expected. You know, all this focus on core, back to basics type stuff. I think that's exactly what we needed. I am probably more blown away after a Citrix Synergy keynote than I have been in years. I'm sure that somebody will probably go back and say, you say that every year. But if you look at all the announcements that were made with Microsoft, we haven't seen that kind of collaboration in a long time, which we'll get into those things. But, I mean, Windows 10 from Azure, all the integration with EMS and Intune and that. This is a big deal. Tomorrow, I think, is technical keynote, so we should get some more information then.
Yeah, because today's keynote, I mean, we were done by, what, 10:30?
Something like that, yeah.
I kind of felt like, hey, that's it. But tomorrow should be a lot more technical information. You know, they mentioned Jesse Lipson coming up and a few other things. So we'll go ahead and live blog that one again.
Yeah, the live blog was fun today. So if you didn't actually watch it, we moved BrianMadden.com to a new platform at TechTarget. It's a platform that TechTarget uses for the rest of their websites. Because TechTarget is such they've got, I don't know, 50 million page views a month and 200 websites or something. You know, when you update content on there, it goes through a caching engine. And that's a long story. Anyway, we needed a new way to do live blogs. We actually used Google Docs.
By the way, if you don't hit shift refresh, sometimes you won't even get the link to our keynote live blog.
So we actually literally just wrote a Google Doc, shared it publicly, and Gabe, Jack, and I had edit rights on it, and just posted all of our thoughts as they were happening into the Google Doc. So take a look at that. We'll post that into an article. A quick side story on that. So, you know, Google, if you ever use Google Docs and an anonymous collaborator comes on, Google says it's anonymous animal. So anonymous cow, anonymous chicken, anonymous... But we were doing this thing live to the internet, so we had like 100 people. And who can name 100 animals, you know? I was sort of curious...
This is the rest of this podcast.
I sort of was curious about what animals they would come up with, and it got into a bunch of them like capybara, aurochs, axolotl, ifrit, quagga. And I went afterwards the podcast to Warren Ponder from Australia.
And Simonson.
Sorry, I'll say Ponder. Warren Ponder is from Idaho. And Warren's...
It's our Australia.
Warren... yeah, it's,
it's our outback.
Deserty, yeah. And has weird animals. Warren Simonson from Australia. And he was talking to, I think, Mike Nelson and Chris Rogers. And I was like, all right, these animals... I listed all these animals I never heard of. I said, these must be Australia. And he said, yeah, probably. And I started listing these animals off, like what I just mentioned. He's like, nah, I don't know those animals. Chris Rogers said, was standing right there, he goes, those are all mythological creatures. And the reason that's funny is if you know Chris Rogers.
So Chris Rogers was the guy that was dressed as Doc Emmett Brown last year at the Synergy, the Geek Speak Tonight session. So, you know, Chris likes the geeky things in the most awesome way.
Yeah, yeah. He himself would say, like, I'm the D&D role-playing guy. That's the guy who you want to tell you these are all mythological creatures.
That was a question on the Geek Out last year, I believe, wasn't it? And so didn't you ask the question during the Geek Out and none of the contestants knew it? And you look down and you see Chris, like, you know, like...
Oh, yeah. How many sides does an AD&D die have or something? It's 20.
Yeah. So we love Chris.
So, you know, so obviously this is... Kirill Tatarinov's first keynote since he became the CEO of Citrix, I think in December or January. I kind of called him out about a month ago, I did an article called "Where Is Kirill?"
Oh, he saw.
I mean, because you know he joined, he talked excited, all this kind of stuff, and then nothing. There was one. There's two press interviews in 4 months. Both of them had no real information in them, and you know he didn't really tweet, didn't really. And I'm like, what's going on? And it did say in those interviews that he's using. He said, well, I'm planning to use Synergy as my kind of coming out party, because a lot of CEOs will have like a 90-day review or 100-day review after they join a big company. And so this was what we were looking for. It was just to see, you know, how that conversation would be led in the direction that he's taking Citrix.
The official line that he used. So in the meetings that we had prior to Citrix Synergy, the CTP meetings, Kirill came and spoke to us, and he said, "Some of you have been wondering where I am." And so addressing just the audience in general, but we all know who. And his response to that was deeply embedded in the product teams, which in your article, you kind of wondered if he was going to be an operationally focused guy, like trim everything, get this thing nice and thin, svelte, and ready to sell. And it turns out, I mean, the vibe I have from him is product guy, a devout product guy. And, you know, you see some of the way that they're kind of, this whole workspace as a service thing that we'll talk about in a little bit, this is taking all these products and actually making them all work together in one single offering. It's not there yet, but this is the kind of thing that they're looking at. And so I do think that the indications are more that he is a product guy, not a trim the fat guy. Do you have that same impression after this? Or
I don't see
no
why
change
those are
at all?
Mutually exclusive. I mean, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but justify to me why Citrix is an independent company and not part of Microsoft.
I
said that. You know, I said, look at the entire Citrix stack. Look at the entire Microsoft stack. Is there really anywhere where they don't compete? Maybe in the NetScaler stuff. I don't know. But, like, I don't understand why they're separate companies. And I said that before today. And all this keynote did today was reinforce that. And I'm not saying that's bad.
But what with the video from Satya and the partnership that of literally every product Citrix makes with something Microsoft makes?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. And so,
which, frankly, that's how they got to where they are today anyway.
Go back to your roots, man.
Yeah.
You know, that's how it is. So let's talk about this. You know, so the theme of Synergy from Citrix this year is yes. We've seen variations of that theme in the past. It's, you know, yes to your users. Yes, they can work how they want. Yes, you can support that app. Yes, you can put 500 more users in your environment. Yes, you can scale. Yes, you can secure it. Yes, you can work from anywhere. So the opening of the keynote was the pretty basic, just, you know, rah-rah type stuff. And then they kind of got into the meat of it. I feel like, for me, the majority of the takeaway from the keynote was reinforcing that their relationship with Microsoft and what they're doing together with Microsoft. And there's a bunch of things that we'll jump into. Like, one very specific announcement. So today, they did not announce new versions of Zen App, Zen Server, Zen Desktop, any of that kind of stuff.
Yes, Zen Server they did.
Not in the keynote.
Yeah, they did.
Well, maybe in the opening, like, oh yeah, we have, like, they didn't talk about it, feature, whatever. It was in the passing, like, you know, we're doing this, we announced Zen Server 7. Like, it's not, they didn't focus on Citrix.
Oh, it was not a Templeton keynote. Yeah, that keynote, a Templeton keynote leads with tech and, you know, follows up with a day two panel with all the business people. And this was not that. There was a couple of demos. They did not go well. But by and large, this was a pretty plain.
Not go well. They failed. The one where they built the form words, but then actually using it failed completely.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about, for me, what I tweeted, the biggest announcement of the show, quite possibly the biggest announcement that we've seen out of Microsoft in months in our space, possibly years, is that Microsoft announced they will allow Windows 10 desktops to be used for VDI purposes and hosted in Azure. Now, here's why this is significant. This is not Microsoft announcing DAS. This is not Citrix announcing DAS, although Citrix didn't talk about DAS. We'll talk about that in a minute. And so I wrote an article in October about this. What a lot of people, I think, don't know is that Microsoft licenses for Windows 10 do not allow you to run a Windows 10 desktop in the cloud. In other words, we all know that there's no service provider license agreement, there's no SPLA for Windows 10, so that's why Amazon Web Services, for example, or pardon me, Amazon Workspaces, you know, you use ServerOS and not, you know, ClientOS. But did you know that you can't take a copy of Windows 10 you buy yourself and just provision a VM in AWS and just run Windows 10 and actually access it. Microsoft says you're allowed to use that for testing purposes, but you are not allowed to use it for actual production purposes. It is not allowed.
News kind of broke back in October, I think it was, that Microsoft would be allowing you to use versions of Windows 10 with software assurance, enterprise versions of Windows 10 with software assurance in Azure. But it was only Azure. It was talked about as a future kind of thing, a short-term thing, but that they would have a program later on beyond that for use in AWS and other service providers as well. So it's been sort of this enigmatic statement that Microsoft made 6 months ago, and now today we actually finally have that confirmation that that's happening. But yeah, like you said, this is not SPLA. This isn't DAS, even though they said DAS in the keynote. This is not desktops as a service. This is, I can use Zen Desktop via either Citrix Workspace Cloud, or Citrix Cloud now, or Zen Desktop on-prem to provision desktops in Azure. End of thing.
But here's what's interesting. What this does is it breaks the hardware requirement for owning hardware to host Windows client.
Yeah.
Because that was always the requirement in the past. So anyone, if you wanted, so first of all, if you owned your servers and wanted to put them in a colo and then run DAS, run desktops off that, VDI, that was fine. If you wanted to use DAS for the DAS provider, that DAS provider could do that as long as they carved out a specific
dedicated
hardware for each customer. You couldn't share, mix and match. You know, with Azure, that changes everything. So now they're going into a random Azure blob,
right,
and they're going to kind of run wherever, and it might be mix and match on the same physical, you know, bits of copper. So
the writing was on the wall for that a year or so ago, too, because Microsoft changed the licensing for Windows to be a per-user license if you wanted to as well. So they did that first, like a year ago, and then they said, okay, now you can maybe use these things in the cloud on Azure someday, and now we have this thing today. This is like the three main milestone announcements.
And so there's a lot of questions. You know, is this going to be Azure only? We have to suspect it's not going to be Azure only. Because of Microsoft's antitrust issues in the past, I don't possibly think they can say that you have a right to do something with Windows on the Azure cloud platform that you cannot do on other platforms.
Yeah, I don't even think they're going to be able to use any legal jargon to say, to sort of exclude other people. I think they're just going to have to open it up.
Now, so that to me is the biggest announcement. Just the fact they're saying, yes, we will allow you to, you know, use Windows 10 desktops as a production VDI desktop in a cloud provider.
Without a doubt.
Now, part of that, though, so that I think is the biggest announcement, but that was not what Citrix announced. What Citrix announced today was that you could use the Zen Desktop VDI Edition, which is basically Citrix's VDI product. And, you know, it plugs into Citrix Workspace Cloud, and we talked about that last year at Synergy, or maybe 2 years ago. The big deal now is that you'll be able to do that in Azure, and Citrix will hook that right into CWC so that it becomes another platform. So when you have your Citrix Workspace and you're clicking buttons on where you want to run your VDIs, in the past you were able to run Zen apps on Azure, and now you'll be able to run Zen desktops on Azure. And that's the context that Citrix said, you know, that we're offering, you know, to DAS providers to be able to do this. So it wasn't quite Citrix is the DAS provider themselves. They didn't announce that, but they announced that if you're a DAS provider, you can use Azure and actually deliver your Zen Desktop EDI Edition desktops, you know, out of the Azure cloud.
Big question going around is, what does this do for Azure Remote App? Does Azure Remote App go away now that these new capabilities managed by Zen App and Zen Desktop are out there, along with, you know, dedicated Windows 10? Does ARA have a place now within, within the whole Azure Remote App? Yeah.
So here's what needs to happen. Here's why I like Azure Remote App. It's dead simple. So it's the same reason why I like Amazon Workspaces. You know, you don't deal with all the garbage of the back end, you know, brokers and provisioning and all that stuff. To use AWS, to use Amazon Workspace, you know, their VDI offering, you click a button, one person can sign up, put your credit card number in, you got a desktop 20 minutes later. You know, if you're a whole team, you can do these. You can click which users have and turn them on, turn them off. Like, it's all, the UI is, like, from a user standpoint, a non-tech user can set up and use it. Same with Azure Remote App. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about putting Zen Desktop on Azure or Zen App on Azure.
Right. Then you get all the complexities of desktop virtualization,
right,
and assembling your own image.
A lot
but
of that,
you can have your own with that, too, I guess. Yeah.
A lot of that is what Citrix Workspace Cloud. Is that the right name of that product?
Citrix Cloud now.
Citrix Cloud a lot of that is what Citrus Cloud sort of allows you to do, to not to worry about the back end, you know, broker and databases and that kind of stuff. So we might be seeing something kind of down this path with allowing, you know, the Citrus Cloud enabling Zen Desktop VDI Edition on Azure. But for me, the big thing is that, you know, I did an article 2-3 months ago about the complexity. So look at how complex the Zen Desktop stack is. Look at how complex the Horizon stack is. Look at how complex, you know, all these stacks are. Because if you look at the whole stack and it's got all these databases and connection brokers, security servers and edge servers and web stores, and they all have that. VMware has that. You know, Citrix has that. So the real value of the cloud is getting all that garbage that is all like the backend infrastructure stack and just disappearing that, so that as the actual customer, you just have desktops and they kind of, you know, it handles databases and provisioning, and you just point it to your Active Directory, point it to the user groups, click, 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 and they happen. So to me, it'll be really interesting to see if, when, and how this line blurs between what is a Citrix Cloud Zen Desktop VDI Edition in Azure, it's a mouthful, and HDX-enabled VDI from the cloud. Follow-up to that.
HDX, how isn't what you just said before the mouthful, HDX-enabled VDI from the cloud?
Because what I just said before, the mouthful still has, I feel like, a lot of moving parts and pieces, even though you're using Citrus Cloud to run your database and your web store and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah.
Or maybe that's all done in the back end, but...
Well, yeah, so I think the gap between those two things is not as big as you think. Let me rephrase. I think Citrix's goal for the gap between those things is they already have that in mind for reducing that gap. Yeah. That's what Workspace as a Service is. That's so Citrix Cloud is Zen Apps and Desktop. It is Zen Mobile. It is ShareFile. It is Netscaler. It is all those things. And you can imagine every single one of those things being in the Azure store and just boom, 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 I'm going to use these things now with HDX. That's going to get you HDX and Netscaler Smart Access and things like that. And so I think the gap is not as large as it sounds when you say it the way you said it with the like super long mouthful and then HDX from the cloud. So I do believe that's Citrix's goal for sure.
The other things...
Do we have any comments?
Let's see. I can't tell here. I've got me saying hello. Let's see. I think Azure Remote App is ideal for non-enterprise customers to publish a few apps. So yeah, so that's Frank Burson. Yeah, Dave's pointing out that I've got to leave. I don't have to be there 12 times, so I got 10 more minutes.
Okay.
I'm giving a Meet the Experts presentation on why VDI fails.
On the show floor.
On the show floor.
So you don't have to go far. So you'll bow out here in a few minutes, and then Jack and I can carry on.
Yeah, and I want to talk about, you know, the other big announcements, you know, the Zen Server 7, you wrote about what that means for GPUs, you know, the Raspberry Pi, Think Clients, you wrote about. There's, you know, there's ShareFile stuff, there's EMS. A lot of the Zen Server and Raspberry Pi you can handle when I leave. I want to talk about now what I'm interested in learning about. Jack, so Citrix, let me say this from a layperson, because, you know, you're the mobility expert and I know everything about mobility because I read what you write. So let me ask this from a layperson. So Citrix today announced, again, I said the big announcements were with Microsoft, that they are going to sort of consolidate or synchronize roadmaps for the Citrix mobility, so Zen Mobile and kind of tying to ShareFile and stuff. They're going to consolidate those roadmaps with Microsoft's mobility offerings, which is EMS, Enterprise Management Suite, and Intune. So it's kind of like, the way I heard that is, what Citrix is doing in EMM, what Microsoft is doing in EMM, they're going to hold hands together and make sure all their stuff is very compatible with each other. And I believe the example that they mentioned in the keynote today was even including like Office 365 and Office apps, like Office for iOS, and is there Office for Android also?
Yeah.
So making those so that you can do app level management with that with Citrix as well. So, and I don't know what, I don't know what that all means. So is this a big deal?
When you put it the way that you just put it, it does sound like a big deal. Of course, we just have to work in the details and see how completely cross-pollinated all of those features get. And, you know, one thing that you also didn't mention was integration, making NetScaler Azure aware. I'm assuming that means Azure AD aware because they mentioned using it for identity.
It is AD.
And NetScalers are VMs now too, so I guess you can plug that in and have stuff.
Which, so that could be great because, you know, right now with Zen Mobile and, you know, that Citrix is single sign-on and, you know, modern federation and identity management as a service is, you know, there's not really too much of a story there. So that'd be better. But the devil is in the details. Today, regarding this entire alignment between EMS and Intune and the larger alignment between Microsoft and Citrix, Brad Anderson posted a blog post at 10 a.m. this morning with a good amount more details. And so the thing that was mentioned in that blog post, and I'm going to our live blog so I can read it directly. One is that, okay, Citrix is integrating with EMS in two big ways. And it says, to begin with, Citrix will be enlightening their apps on iOS and Android with the Intune App SDK and building support for Azure Active Directory for identity. So Citrix will be enlightening their apps on iOS with the Intune App SDK. So what does that mean? So that means that the Citrix apps are going to have the Intune management bits in them. So that means that you can manage the Citrix apps with Intune. There's nothing about it being the other way around yet. So what this means is that for now, you know, so far, is that you're flowing all of the. You guys are confusing me here. That we're looking for some technical details.
Okay, fine. Sorry, I need the VGA adapter. So Jack was like,
we're trying to have a side conversation.
Gabe and I are having a sign language conversation to each other. Jack's talking. So sorry. Go on.
Yeah. So this means you can manage. This means that you can manage Citrix apps with Intune. So it means that Intune can manage a lot more. But it still doesn't yet mean that Zen Mobile can manage a lot more. So it's not quite the full integration of ecosystems yet. But now that says to begin with. So, you know, we hope that the circle could be completed the full way.
But does it matter? Like, so your point is, so Citrix is giving all their stuff to Microsoft, so you can use Microsoft to manage the Citrix stuff. But what you're saying is it's not the other way around. Is that Citrix is rolling over and giving Microsoft whatever they want? Like, in this world, why would I use Zen Mobile? Why am I not just using EMS and Intune from Microsoft?
Yeah, that's a question. You know, we just have to see what other integrations come out and, you know, what other, if there are any more cross-populations.
Is this a big deal for the other EMM providers? You know, BlackBerry with good technology, Mobile Iron, VMware with AirWatch. Is this like, oh, these guys are screwed now? Or is it, you know, it's all fine, it doesn't matter anymore?
Well, if that cross-population occurs, and because if so far, just taking it on face value, this very first step, it's okay, say you have Intune, you know, you can manage all the Office apps, or now you can also manage the apps from Citrix. So you can do more with Intune. But it's at this very preliminary step of what we know now, it's not quite creating the big, huge, super ecosystem. The key is, going just by what that blog post says today, is that it's not quite yet Citrix managing the Microsoft apps, which would be the big deal, because right now the Microsoft apps, to get the good management, you have to manage them with Intune. And as of what we concretely know from this announcement today, that still isn't changing.
Okay, so yeah, the good management of Microsoft apps, you need Intune. Post-announcement, the good management of Microsoft apps, you need Intune.
And now you can also manage the Citrix apps.
Now,
so what I would like to see as someone watching the whole industry is sort of like a unification of the mobile management APIs, like say, hey, if Citrix could also manage apps that have incorporated the Intune SDK, then that means like it's just one big ecosystem where everything works together.
And get slammed for it?
Yeah, I wrote that blog post, you know, like 4 years ago or whatever.
I think App Detective laid into you.
What's the EMM market look like now? Is Intune and EMS a thing? You know, like, are they getting good traction? Is Zen Mobile Is that a thing? Like, is this important? Is Mobile Iron and VMware still dominate, and these are the two third and fourth place players? Like, how's it all shaken out?
Hey, you put those charts from Brad's blog post into the into our live blog there. You know,
the chart you're referring to is where fourth quarter last year, Microsoft was getting 3,100 new customers for EMS, and AirWatch got 2,000. First quarter this year, Microsoft gained from 3,000 to 4,500, and VMware fell from 2,000 to 1,000.
Right. So those numbers that we're talking are customers gained per quarter.
Right. So net new customers per quarter. So basically, between fourth quarter last year and first quarter this year, Microsoft gained like 30% more customers in that quarter than they had gained the prior quarter, and VMware only gained half as many customers that they had gained the prior quarter.
Yeah, and you know, last week at Briform, so many conversations I was having, everyone's doing POCs, or POCs, as they would say it, in the UK parlance. They're all doing Intune POCs.
And does Microsoft, is Intune free? I mean, like, because you know a lot of Microsoft stuff, it's like AppD is basically free. You know what I mean? Are they doing that?
Is it free as long as you have SA or whatever?
Yeah, that's another huge question there. You know, as Microsoft has been talking about more and more business for Intune, we've sort of been standing back and saying like, we don't really know how they're counting it, since some parts of Intune are available, you know, just come with Office 365. So who knows how they're actually counting?
Is this a big deal to the other? I mean, I mentioned this already. Is this, you know, obviously all the other EMM vendors are going to say, oh, this just, they're going to do their marketing line around, it doesn't matter. But like, really, is this a big deal to them?
But they have admitted to starting to notice Microsoft competitively. You know, overall, this is still a wide open industry. You know, most of us don't have EMM yet. So this space is, it's absolutely wide open.
I mean, they
talk
about
EMS. This is a big deal.
Yeah, they say that EMS is its, you know, its fastest growing. Fastest growing business, and like it will make it to a $1 billion business for them in record time, and that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and that's you know like more than twice as much.
So they get money somewhere.
You know that's more than twice as much as you know as other EMM.
But it's hard to say though, because how does Microsoft account for that internally? Every dollar Mobile Iron earns is because someone gave them a dollar for EMM. Whereas Microsoft might just say, oh, SA, now we're allocating $7 per license towards EMM versus $1 for EMM, and overnight you have 7x revenue.
Yeah, so as suspect of, as we are of these numbers, though, you know, like I said at Briform, that was one of the first movements, one of the first times where everyone's like, oh, yeah, this is what we're looking at, which this is, you know, that's the first conference, big conference I've been to this year, but, you know, like last year, at this time, and last year, like late summer, I wasn't hearing that. So, big change there.
All right, so it's a good segue. I need to bow out if you want to dial me down. But talk about, you know, Raspberry Pi, thin clients, talk about Zen Server 7, and
I'm going to fade you down
as in channel one.
All right, so I'm fading.
Yeah, you're gone. Okay, bye. We can still hear on my mic.
So, as we have Brian disconnect his microphone and walk away.
I think he turned off you.
You know, so...
Yeah, he turned off you.
Oh, so Brian turned off my receiver.
Oh,
so
shit.
If I talk very loudly, I'll come into Gabe's microphone.
Because the receivers are disconnected, it makes loud noise.
Okay. Evidently not.
So,
What if the other one's...
Get out of here.
Yeah, so there was this this Raspberry Pi Citrix receiver device, whatever, and you know I know Gabe from the other work that you and Brian are doing right now, that you know what your way around these small sorts of devices.
Yeah, I'll tell you the hang on, I'm still working on getting stuff powered off here. Okay. We had lots of blinky lights, and I don't know what blinky lights mean, so I was just pushing buttons until they stopped blinking.
Yeah.
But I think everybody can still hear us. I expect Kays to, or not Kays, Frank Bearson is in the chat room, so I suspect he'll let us know if we go away. So Raspberry Pi Thin Client. For years, we have been asking Citrix for these. And just because they seem like this perfect mix of super cheap device, it's got an H.264 decoder on the board itself, and Citrix supports H.264 as one of the codecs that you can use in HDX. And so it seems like an easy win, and what it really took was management. And over the years, there's this company called ThinLinks that has created a Citrix receiver for, they've created a Thin Client OS based on Raspbian, which is the standard Raspberry Pi operating system. And they've added management and stuff, and it's done okay. It didn't perform all that well when I tried it, but I wasn't trying to connect to H.264 Citrix Stream Sessions. I was trying to just random RDP, that kind of a thing. So it does all right, and the management is actually pretty slick. And so what happened is, in the last few months, Citrix started working with them, and they have now modified it to the point where it's still ThinLinks and the TLX OS operating system on there, but they've got the latest Citrix receiver on it, and they've got, you know, they added enough tweaks to make this thing a viable thin client. They've got two launch partners, so Citrix isn't actually making the hardware. ViewSonic and another one that I can't remember right now. TI? But they don't make hardware either. I don't know. There's another one. I'll find it. So they have two launch partners for these. And if you buy like 200 units, you can get the price down to like $73 per unit. And that Raspberry Pi is $35-$40. The case is usually 10, the power supply is a couple of bucks too. And so really it's like $20 difference between doing it on your own and buying this thing client. And that $20 is basically your cost for management.
And then you have to have somebody, you know, if you're doing it on your own, you're having somebody screw a box of Raspberry Pis into a box of cases.
Yeah, exactly. And so this way you can just order it and get, and they just show up. They put Visa mounts on them and Kensington locks and things like that. The Kensington lock to me is really funny because since it's a Raspberry Pi case, it just snaps together like every other Raspberry Pi case in the world, like even the ones that you can 3D print. And so so you can just like pop off the top that has the Kensington lock on and still walk away with the Raspberry Pi. But it does have these kinds of features, and I don't think it's going to be for... it's not going to be for high-end use cases. It supports a single monitor. They think they can maybe squeak a second monitor out of it, but the Raspberry Pi is not the strongest in the graphics department. But it'll drive a 1080p monitor. It has audio. It has a lot of stuff. There's a few limitations, but all in all, I think it's going to be good for smaller environments.
Well, so what's the market for this? Because, I mean, okay, a $70 thin client, it only supports one monitor. Why am I getting this thing? What's so special about it? Besides the fact that, like, it's cool because it's Raspberry Pi.
It's Raspberry Pi-ness makes it not that cool. But as far as single-board computers go, that's the most well-known of them all. The market for it is, you know, task workers. There's a lot of talk about everybody has dual monitors, and that may be true in knowledge workers and higher-end, you know, use cases, but there's still an awful lot of data entry people that have a single monitor.
Yeah.
And this would work well for that kind of a thing.
But still, why am I buying this compared to any other cheap thin client that's on the market?
It's cheaper. So where it'll compete is with the HDX SoC thin clients and computing, people like that. The problem is when you buy thin clients, you have to invest in the entire stack. Otherwise, you're going to have different management consoles for different types of thin clients. And so, you might have these thin clients from Dell, and these thin clients from HP, and these from Tenzig, and each one of them has a different management stack. And so you've got different consoles based on what people are using, and that's a pain in the neck. With ThinLinks, especially for smaller environments, they didn't disclose any scalability numbers, but the numbers that they threw out there were hundreds, not thousands, but nothing specific. But so with ThinLinks, the operating system that runs on the Raspberry Pi thin clients, that OS is also x86. They're capable of running on x86 machines. So Intel Nook, any x86 thin clients, it's kind of like Stratodesk. Do you remember them?
Yeah.
So they're still around too. But so you could use this to repurpose PCs. And so now you've got a single management point for all those devices. Plus, you've got these $75 thin clients. It's not going to take over the world, but it's just exciting that Citrix finally did something with the Raspberry Pi. And they've made something that's really capable allegedly. I don't have a Bluetooth keyboard to plug it into this thing to test it. It's really capable and for not a lot of money. But again, this is low-end use cases. Once you get to dual monitors, that's not a thing anymore. There's only one HDMI port on them, so you'd have to split it or something like that somehow anyway. And so we'll see how they put it through its paces. The other benefit here is that Raspberry Pi, they rev their boards every year. I think the gap between the Raspberry Pi 2 and the Raspberry Pi 3 that's in this thin client was like 6 months. And each time they do that, they get more and more powerful, and so they'll have more and more capabilities. So this is a V1. We'll see how it goes, and you know, we'll see what kind of use cases emerge for it. But make no mistake, they're all lower end use cases. Yeah,
so looking at, you know, after today's keynote and after today's announcements, I think there's a lot more to dig into tomorrow morning. You know, what are the other updates on, you know, Zen Mobile?
Yeah,
because like Ryan was saying, you know, we didn't get, we got all the Microsoft collaboration announcements, but we assume that the product managers for all these other products have been busy with, you know, the 6 or, 12 months worth of updates. So hopefully we'll get all that tomorrow morning.
We will. So they announced a little bit of things today. They announced a few things today without details. The most important one, I think, to me, the one I'm most excited to see is Zen Server 7, which up until now I have not cared at all about Zen Server. It's just another hypervisor. I care about that. I care about what hypervisor you use about as much as I care about what sticker is on the hardware that you bought. However, Intel has this Iris Pro GPU that they're baking into the actual processor itself nowadays. And Zen Server is the first hypervisor to support that. Now, you can expect everybody else is going to follow along in too right now, but today, Zen Server is the only one that supports this. And that means that we're not going to be able to satisfy super high-end graphical use cases without adding in NVIDIA or an AMD GPU, but we can give our knowledge and task workers the ever so small smidgen of a GPU core that they need just to do their normal job and have Windows 10 look normal. Even like scrolling in Internet Explorer is accelerated graphics, and or Edge is accelerated in a normal on a normal PC, and always looked weird in Citrix world or in remote desktop virtualization world. Now, running on Zen Server, we can expose just enough GPU to make Windows not look so weird.
So where do we actually see this? Because, assuming a company that, you know, doesn't currently have any Zen Server deployments, do they throw this on, some sort of HCI appliance just for their specific VDI host, or?
Zen Server, the only people that use Zen Server are using it for Zen App and Zen Desktop. It's probably not the only. There's probably a few other workloads out there, but it's safe to say the majority of Zen Server users that aren't like service providers that have cloud services and things like that are using it. So the majority of enterprises using Zen Server are using it for Zen App and Zen Desktop. So those people with modern hardware and now Zen Server 7 should be able to take advantage of that pretty quickly. That also requires the latest feature release of Zen Desktop or Zen App. That's where the HCX 3D Pro protocol enhancements support that accessing the GPU as well. I don't think they're going to get a whole lot of people to run and throw out all their vSphere stuff and replace it with Zen Server, because frankly, the number one thing that I expect at VMworld now is Intel Iris graphics support, right? Like, that's going to be in there. Nobody's going to abandon VMware and go to Zen Server, but I think that if you are a Zen Server customer, you've been rewarded for your loyalty. So that's one of the things, too. I believe they're showing that off here. We're going to have a busy day tomorrow. I was looking at our schedule. We have a couple-hour gap today, and we have a few-hour gap tomorrow. It might be we're trying to do a podcast tomorrow if we have time, if there's new details that emerge about things that we can talk about. But either way, we're going to spend all of our downtime when we're not speaking in various sessions or meeting to discuss best of Citrix Synergy Awards. We're going to spend all that time in the booths talking to sponsors here, regular vendors here that have announcements to make, and of course Citrix, because there's quite a bit. I mean, the video of a Raspberry Pi isn't going to be all that interesting. Like, yeah, it's a thin client now, but it just works. But if they're showing any of the stuff that you guys were talking about with EMS and all the integration, if they can show even if that's not done right now, if they can show what that's going to look like, that'll be pretty interesting, right? And then, so the Zen Server stuff, I pulled up, I have a PowerPoint with all the stuff on it. So the ACX Ready Thin Client, they've got a lot of enhancements for, like, running Spectre for Business in sessions. There's share file stuff, are you going to go into any of that, or is that just like, yeah, that's happening now?
Yeah, some of that's happening now. There's other stuff, you know, Zen Mobile 10.3 came out a few months ago. So that means that MDM for Windows 10 and Mac came out. So I'm kind of interested to see if I can track down anybody that's starting to do that. You know, I talked to people at Briforum that were interested in the concept of MDM for Windows 10. So if they have, you know, some early test right. customers, I'd like to talk to them.
So I might have missed this when I was trying to figure out something with the podcast rig. You were asking me the other day about Citrix's messaging around leading with MAM instead of MDM.
Yeah.
Did you see anything today that sort of indicated that there is something new in that regard? Because you thought they'd been able to do that for a long time.
Yeah, so they had a, you know, there was a blog post around 10.3.5 that, you know, talking, okay, we're leading with a MAM first and by mobile application management first, MAM only. This is a type of stuff that's built into the app level, not the stuff that's based on device management.
Okay.
And they're like, we are continuing to be able to provide standalone MAM. So that blog post was a bit confusing.
Right. It's like having a press release that says, we are continuing to sell Synapse.
Yeah. Because remember, standalone mobile app management is what they started with back in 2012 when it was, what was it then? Like, is that before they were using the Cloud Gateway term?
Man, that all runs together.
Because they started doing standalone mobile app management before they bought Zenprise, and I remember writing a blog post saying, you know, Citrix should just stick to the mobile app management stuff. My how times have changed. But this is a great tee up for my session, which happens in an hour and 40 minutes. Parsing the different types of mobile app management. You know, so much, you know, we used to have these conversations about MDM versus MAM a couple of years ago. Now with Android for Work and iOS's built-in mobile app management capabilities, we have still a lot more of those conversations about, you know, app wrapping versus SDKs versus using Android for Work versus using the stuff that's built into the iPhone now. So this is very interesting. So come to my session and learn how to parse the differences.
All right.
You know, some vendors, they concentrate on more on one than the other.
I don't have your session on this list. Do you happen to know what it is?
So my session is 2 p.m. today.
In a room somewhere here. Go to citrixsynergy.com/agenda or whatever and see if you can find
it. Yeah, I'll tweet it at some point between now and then. I have just want to grab some quick lunch and go over my slides a bit more.
That's what I have to do. So I have a 7:30 p.m. session. I'm in prime time, baby. Meet the expert session about how the death of Windows is exaggerated and you'll probably still be managing it in 15 years. It'll be managing it differently, but that's what that session will be about. There was one more bit of news that I wanted to hit on, just because, you know, we spent the last 6 or 8 months talking about, spent the last year, really, talking about what Citrix deems core. And they appear to have considered OctoBlue core. And that was one of the things early on that we just thought they were just going to say, well, we probably shouldn't have done that, and throw it off to the side. They seem to be treating IoT as a core pillar of Citrix nowadays. And it's far less sexy than it was.
Well, so if you consider the role of IoT in this regard to be the integration of everything, I think that was, you know, maybe mentioned in some blog posts that you did about a year ago.
Because that was a Mark Templeton thing.
Yeah, yeah. So I was just reading about this. And so, you know, IoT is one of these things that it's such a vague concept. It's like a few years ago, if we were talking, like, is cloud a core concept? Cloud is a part of every single part of IT in some way or another.
Right.
Just like IoT is a part of every single, or will in theory be a part of every part of IT in some way or another. The question is, like, is IoT just sort of an effect that happens to all of our products and, you know, like...
Everything that has an IP address now?
Yeah, like, it's just another level of background process of integration that just happens to be a part of everything now? Or does IoT come along and become, a big changeover point, like when iOS and Android came along? That was a big changeover point. But IoT coming along, like...
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a behind-the-scenes kind of thing. It's connective tissue. And we see that a little bit this year. We don't have people coming on stage from Octoblue making lights blink when they flex their arm, which is nerd porn and is awesome and super cool to watch. They do have, I believe, a makerspace here where they have some things going on that are IoT related, but we're not like putting LEDs under Chris Flex Tesla and watching how we can light those up differently with Twitter and like play Journey songs inside of it, which I think all of those things were true last year. Now the IoT message from Citrix is more focused, so less about the flash of the whole thing and more about the practicality of it. They've talked about examples in healthcare, being able to bind together devices that check vital signs and automatically sync that into the nurse's session that's doing the checking and saving 4 minutes per visit. Minutes, I guess I should say. They said four. That was marketing. Between 0 minutes and 4 minutes of time at each patient visit. And that's the kind of thing that hospitals go bananas for, because that means they can service more patients with fewer nurses. So sorry, nurses, IoT is happening.
Yeah.
But my point here is that the messaging around IoT is becoming more focused and less about the frills. And I don't know if that's a business Citrix should be in, but it does seem it seems like something that fits back behind the scenes. And if we can start to, maybe if there's management of those devices, maybe something.
Yeah, that's another question, because a lot of EMM vendors, you know, all these IoT things, you know, they have a lot in common with managing a mobile device. So there's a natural affinity there. And
does VMware call their AirWatch stuff? Do they bring up IoT when they talk about AirWatch? I mean, you hear about AirWatch managing pop machines and stuff like that, but do they actually use IoT as a word?
Yeah, that's very much a thing that they do. And that's something that, like, we haven't really heard of, you know, Zen Mobile managing all these random things yet. And maybe that's, you know, ultimately, like, well, yes, the things like of, you know, a pop machine and a mobile device do have a lot in common, but then again, you know, there's also a lot that they don't have in common.
I can't wait to sell that to some healthcare administrator when you're like, well, you see, this pop machine isn't really that much different than this blood pressure monitor.
Yeah. So
but at that low a level, it isn't.
But the question is, like, you know, does your end user computing workspace that, you know, you're getting applications and data to users on different devices. Like a pop machine is a device too, but do you need, it's, you know, we're talking completely different sets of data. And
they're coming at it from different angles too.
Yeah.
So last thing, so you mentioned Zen Mobile, and I was just thinking, you know, if we're talking about expanding Zen Mobile into areas like that, imagine if we could use that to manage the Think clients as well. So now you have cloud-based management of, you know, these Raspberry Pi Think clients or something.
Yeah,
like that.
And
that might be cool.
Yeah, and we had Zen Mobile managing those ViewSonic Android Think clients before with some, there were some special integrations in there.
I don't know if anybody bought those.
Yeah.
So, all right. I believe that's it for now for us.
Do you have
any closing thoughts? I mean, I'm more excited about tomorrow than anything else.
I was just going to say to everybody listening, what a wild ride this podcast. This is a day of experimentation. We're on a new website platform. You know, as you know, we don't have Justin Meisinger anymore. So we, like, new process for the live blog, new process for the podcast, new process for the video recording. And this is our first conference doing all of those things. So
he was paying attention to Bryform last week. I'm slightly surprised that he's not in the chat room here saying, guys, you have to turn this knob this way.
Yeah.
But I'm sure he'll listen later. So, Justin, if you do check us out, we miss you, buddy. this is hard. so wild ride for the podcast, wild ride for the keynote. Tomorrow should be more technical details. And so if we don't do a podcast, we'll have plenty of articles. We are flush with content for the next couple of weeks, I think.
That we are. So I guess I'll take that opportunity to say thanks to Brian, wherever he is.
yep.
Thank you, Gabe.
Yeah, thank you, Jack. And thanks to Mariah for fending off all the people that want to come up and shake our hands while we're doing this.
No,
we can only point at the microphone so much, and Mariah is just duking it out with them.
Yeah.
All right, so until next time, see y'all later. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, I guess we have to figure out where and how to press pause. Do you really want to stop broadcasting? Yes.